A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel wrote in with a whole thing about a documentary he watched years ago, one that followed a research team through a season at one of the bowls. What stuck with him wasn't the science, it was the logistician, the person who had to place an order for everything. An isolated group of people would need for months, knowing the airlift window closes, and after that there's no resupply. Toilet paper, medical supplies, alcohol, leisure items, enough margin that people aren't miserable. His question is, what does that inventory actually look like? And what's the reliable list that keeps people not just medically nourished, but mentally intact when conditions turn adverse? He points to those U.S. naval warships stuck on unplanned long deployments, sailors reporting heightened suicidal ideation, as proof that getting this wrong has real consequences.
And he's right to connect those two things. A carrier and a polar station are the same logistics problem at different scales. Both are sealed environments where the next delivery date is a promise, not a guarantee. The difference is the station planner knows the promise is broken from the start. The window closes, the last flight leaves, and whatever you didn't order is just not there.
So let's open the shipping manifest and see what they actually pack. The obvious stuff first, then the stuff that keeps people sane.
Start with food, because that's where the volume goes and where the psychology lives. A polar station isn't ordering groceries for a week. They're ordering for a year, and the baseline requirement is calorie density. You need 4,000 calories a day per person in winter, sometimes more, because the body burns through energy just staying warm. So you're looking at freeze-dried meals, bulk flour, oil, butter, sugar, powdered milk, canned vegetables, frozen meat. McMurdo keeps something like a year of frozen and dry stores on hand.
And the fresh stuff is a clock. The last flight in February brings fresh fruit and vegetables, eggs, maybe lettuce, and everyone knows that's the last salad until October. They call it the freshy window. When the lettuce runs out, it's frozen and canned and reconstituted from there.
Right, and that's where menu fatigue becomes a medical issue, not a preference. People stop eating enough when the food is boring. They lose weight, they get irritable, they make mistakes. So the planner has to think about variety as a nutrient. Different cuisines, different textures, hot sauce, spices, coffee. Coffee is non-negotiable. There are stations where the coffee grinder breaking is treated as a maintenance emergency on par with the water pump.
Because it's one. That's the thing Daniel's documentary hinted at. The non-obvious essentials are where the planning gets real. Toilet paper. Run the numbers on toilet paper for 20 people for 9 months. It's not a case, it's a pallet. And it's bulky, so it competes with everything else for space on the flight.
Cleaning supplies, laundry detergent, batteries, light bulbs, printer toner, pens, paper. Spare parts for every piece of equipment that could break, because a broken snowmobile in July isn't a repair, it's a missing snowmobile until November. You stock a second water pump, a spare heating element, extra fuses, belts, filters, seals. The rule is, if it has a moving part, you have a spare. If it has two moving parts, you have two spares.
Medical supplies is a whole category that surprises people. The station has a doctor, sometimes two, but they're generalists. They can set a broken bone, treat frostbite, do minor surgery, manage infections. So the pharmacy is stocked for a year of common ailments, antibiotics, painkillers, dental supplies. Because dental emergencies happen and there's no dentist. The doctor gets trained in basic dentistry before deployment. You stock anesthetic, extraction tools, temporary fillings.
I practiced medicine for years, and the Polar Station formulary is a fascinating thing. You're not stocking for rare emergencies, you're stocking for the mundane. Skin infections, urinary tract infections, sprains, burns, gastrointestinal bugs. The doctor can't do an appendectomy, so you either have a surgeon on station, or you screen for appendix issues before deployment. Some stations have actually removed appendixes prophylactically for winter over crews, though that's fallen out of favor.
That's a wild sentence. We're going to take your appendix out because the plane won't come back for 8 months.
It's the logic of the environment. Everything becomes a calculation about what you can handle on site versus what requires evacuation. And evacuation in winter is either impossible or extraordinarily dangerous. So you stock for what you can treat and you screen for what you can't.
Clothing and gear. Extreme cold weather gear is issued per person, but you also stock replacements and repair kits. A broken zipper on a parka in June is a crisis. You can't order a new zipper. So you have sewing kits, zipper pulls, patching material, extra gloves, extra boots in common sizes. And the gear has to work for months of hard use. Things wear out faster in the cold. Plastics get brittle, fabrics tear.
The psychological items are where the good planners separate themselves. Books, board games, musical instruments, art supplies, workout equipment, a gym, a sauna if the station has one. Alcohol is a whole policy question. The Australian Antarctic Division has a formal alcohol policy for its stations. They ration it. There are limits on how much you can drink per week, and there are dry stations. The rationale is health and safety, but also morale. You want people to have a beer with dinner, not a bottle alone in their room.
And the margin question is what Daniel was really poking at. You don't order for exactly the expected need. You build in a buffer, 10 to 20% extra across the board, more for things that are critical or unpredictable. Because you can't predict a flu outbreak that burns through the cold medicine, or a storm that delays the last flight, or a batch of canned goods that turns out spoiled.
But margin has a cost. Every extra case is weight and volume on a flight that's limited capacity. The logistician's art is balancing enough against too much, too little, and people suffer. Too much, and you've wasted a slot that could have carried something else, so you prioritize. Medical supplies get the biggest buffer. Food gets a solid buffer. Leisure items get a smaller one.
The airlift calendar at U.S. stations, like McMurdo and South Pole, runs roughly October through February, the austral summer. That's the window. Flights come in, supplies go out, people rotate. For the rest of the year, the station is sealed. There's no Amazon Prime. There's no emergency delivery. You're on your own.
Which forces a just-in-case philosophy, not just-in-time. Every item has to survive the winter. Perishables need special storage. Frozen food needs freezers that won't fail. Fresh food has a hard expiration date. And you're also storing everything for months before it's even used. The food that arrives in February is still being eaten in October. So packaging matters. Shelf life matters. How things are stored matters.
There's a whole science to how you pack a station. You don't just dump everything in a warehouse. You stage it. The things you'll need in March are accessible in March. The things you'll need in August are buried deeper, but not so deep you can't get to them. And you have to know where everything is. Because in a blizzard, you don't want to be searching for the spare heating element.
The inventory itself becomes a document. Everything is logged, everything has a location, everything has a reorder point. The person who manages this at a station is essentially running a small city's worth of supply chain with no resupply. It's a fascinating job, and it's the one Daniel's documentary focused on, which is why it was a great documentary. Most people would focus on the scientists. He focused on the person who made the science possible.
And that person's decisions are life or death in a very real sense. If you forget something, you can't just run to the store. If you order the wrong thing, you live with it for a year. There's a story about a station that accidentally ordered a year's supply of a food nobody liked, and they ate it anyway because that's what there was. Menu fatigue isn't just boredom. It's a slow grind on morale.
Let's move to what happens when the calculation fails. The USS Abraham Lincoln is the clearest recent example. The carrier was supposed to be on a standard deployment in the Middle East, deterring healthy attacks on shipping. Instead, the deployment kept getting extended, and extended again, and again. The crew was told they were going home, then told they weren't. Food rationing started. Morale collapsed.
The reports from that deployment were grim. Sailors were experiencing heightened rates of suicidal ideation. The leadership had to hold a town hall meeting where mental health was the main topic. That's a logistics failure, but not the kind people usually think of. They didn't run out of food. They ran out of certainty.
That's the key insight. The Abraham Lincoln had supplies. What it didn't have was a known end date. The crew's psychological state was tied to the promise that they'd be home by a certain time. When that promise kept breaking, the effect was devastating. People can endure a lot if they know when it ends. Uncertainty is the thing that breaks them.
And that's exactly what a polar station planner is trying to avoid. The Winter Rover crew knows the end date from the start. The first flight in October is on the calendar. That certainty is part of the logistics. It's not a physical supply, but it's a psychological one.
The Mawson Station airdrop failure in June 2024 is the other kind of failure. An Australian Defence Force resupply airdrop to Mawson Station, which is in Antarctica, missed its target during the winter season. This was a rare attempt to deliver supplies during the impossible months, and it failed. The critical supplies didn't reach the station.
What happened to the people at Mawson? They had to make do with what they had. The margin was the thing that saved them. If the station had been stocked to the exact expected need, a missed airdrop would have been a crisis. Instead, it was a setback. The buffer absorbed the failure.
And that's the lesson. The margin isn't luxury. It's insurance against the unknown. When a delivery fails, when a deployment extends, when a storm closes the runway for an extra 3 weeks, the margin is what keeps people from misery. The misery margin, if you want to call it that, is the difference between a hard winter and a dangerous one.
So what does a reliable inventory look like? Beyond the calories and the medical kits, it includes items that signal we plan for you to be human. Birthday cake mixes, because someone will have a birthday in July and they should have a cake. Holiday decorations, because Christmas in Antarctica is a thing, and it matters. Personal care items that aren't strictly necessary, but make people feel like themselves. A variety of food, so nobody eats the same meal 4 days in a row.
The best planners treat morale as a supply chain requirement. It's not an afterthought, it's a line item. You budget for it the same way you budget for fuel. Because a crew that's miserable makes mistakes, and mistakes in a polar station are expensive. A crew that's fed, rested, and has something to look forward to is a crew that works well.
There's a term for this in the military. It's called morale and welfare. The idea that a soldier's psychological state is a logistics problem. You supply it. You plan for it. You don't just hope for it.
And the polar station is the purest version of that problem. You can't rotate people out. You can't send them home for a weekend. You can't even give them a change of scenery. Everything that sustains them has to be in the building. The inventory is the entire world of possible experiences for 9 months.
That's a heavy responsibility for the person placing the order. Daniel's documentary captured that. The logistician isn't just buying supplies. They're buying the quality of life for a group of people they may never see again until spring.
Let me circle back to something you said earlier about the freshie window. The last flight in February brings fresh produce, and everyone knows it's the last fresh produce until October. That moment, when the lettuce runs out, is a psychological marker. The crew knows winter has truly begun. Good planners will stretch the freshies as long as possible. They'll store apples and potatoes and onions and carrots in cool, dark places. They'll time the meals so the last fresh thing is eaten with some ceremony.
There's a ritual quality to it. The last fresh egg becomes an event. The last orange is shared. It's not just food. It's a countdown. And the countdown matters because the crew needs to feel time passing towards something.
The same is true on the other end. The first flight in October brings fresh food, and that's a celebration. The Winter Rover crew has been eating frozen and canned for months, and the first apple in October is a revelation. People cry over the first fresh fruit.
That's not an exaggeration. There are documented accounts of Winter Rover crews having emotional reactions to the first fresh produce of spring. It's a sensory reminder that the world outside still exists, and they're about to rejoin it.
Which brings us back to the Abraham Lincoln. The sailors on that carrier weren't waiting for fresh fruit. They were waiting for a date that kept moving. And the moving date was the psychological injury. The food rationing was almost secondary. It was the symbol of the broken promise.
The Navy's problem was that the operational need kept overriding the personnel need. The carrier was doing important work deterring healthy attacks, but the cost of that deterrence was being paid by the crew's mental health. And the leadership had to acknowledge that in a town hall meeting. That's a remarkable admission for a military organization.
It is, and it shows that even the most disciplined organizations can't just tough their way through a logistics failure. The human need for certainty and normalcy is real. You can't ration your way around it.
What would a polar station planner say to the Navy? Probably something like, you planned for the mission, but you didn't plan for the extension. The margin wasn't just about food, it was about the psychological buffer. And when the extension kept coming, the buffer ran out.
The Mawson airdrop is the inverse. The buffer was there, and it worked. The station absorbed a failed delivery without catastrophe. That's what good planning looks like. It's boring. Nothing dramatic happens because the margin covered the failure.
The drama is in the planning, not the outcome. The logistician who orders 20% extra toilet paper isn't a hero. They're just someone who did the math. But when the airdrop misses, that extra toilet paper is the difference between a bad week and a bad winter.
Let's talk about the specific categories one more time, because Daniel asked for the full inventory. Food, we covered. Medical, covered. Clothing and gear, covered. Spare parts, covered. Cleaning supplies, batteries, consumables. Toilet paper, which deserves its own line item because the volume is staggering. A person uses roughly a roll a week. 20 people for 40 weeks is 800 rolls. That's a lot of volume.
And it's not compressible. You can't dehydrate toilet paper. It takes up the space it takes up. So it competes with food and medical supplies for space on the flight. Every roll is a choice.
Alcohol is a category that varies by nation and station. The Australians ration it. The Americans at McMurdo have bars and a store where you could buy alcohol with a card system. The British stations have a tradition of a well-stocked bar. It's a morale item, but it's also a safety item. Too much alcohol in an isolated environment is dangerous. Too little and people get resentful.
The balance is a thing. A beer with dinner is normal. A bottle of whiskey in your room is a problem. The planner has to stock enough for the first without enabling the second.
And the same is true of every morale item. You stock enough variety to keep people interested, but not so much that they retreat into their rooms and stop socializing. The goal is a community that functions, not a collection of hermits.
There's a social engineering component to the inventory. The common areas are stocked with games and movies and music. The private areas are more Spartan. The design of the station itself encourages people to gather.
The gym is a critical piece of infrastructure. Physical health in winter is hard to maintain. It's dark, it's cold, you're inside all the time. The gym gives people a way to burn energy and stay fit. And it's a social space. People work out together, they spot each other, they complain about the same things.
The sauna is another one. Scandinavian stations have saunas as a matter of course. It's a place to warm up, to relax, to have a conversation that isn't about work. The sauna is almost a medical facility in that environment.
Hobbies. You stock art supplies, musical instruments, woodworking tools, photography gear, books, movies, games. The winter over crew has a lot of time. The work doesn't fill the day the way it does in summer, so you need things to do. A person with nothing to do in a polar station is a person who's going to have a bad winter.
And the hobby supplies are chosen for variety. Not everyone wants to paint. Not everyone wants to play guitar. So you stock a range. The planner is trying to anticipate what 20 different people will want to do with their free time for 9 months.
The library is a whole project. Physical books, e-books, movies, TV series, music. You're stocking entertainment for a year, and you're stocking it for a group of people with different tastes. The person who wants to read naval history and the person who wants to watch romantic comedies both need to be served.
There's a famous story about a station that had a single copy of a movie everyone wanted to watch, and it became a scheduling crisis. The planner learned to stock multiple copies of popular titles.
The small things matter disproportionately. Spices, hot sauce, chocolate, coffee, tea. These are the things people miss first. A person can eat bland food for a while, but after 3 months, they'd trade a lot for a decent hot sauce.
And the planner knows this. The inventory includes a surprising amount of condiments and flavorings. Because the food is frozen and canned and reconstituted, and the flavor is the thing that makes it bearable.
The fresh food craving is real. People dream about fresh vegetables. There are accounts of winter over crews fantasizing about salad. The planner can't solve that, but they can mitigate it with frozen vegetables, sprouts grown on station, herbs grown under lights.
Some stations have greenhouses. Growing fresh greens in Antarctica is a thing. It's a morale project as much as a food project. The person who tends the lettuce is doing something real and tangible, and the crew gets a salad in July.
The psychological value of a greenhouse is enormous. It's green, it's alive, it smells like summer. In a place where nothing grows, a room full of plants is a sanctuary.
So the inventory is a mirror of human needs. It shows what we actually require to function, not just what we require to survive. The calories keep you alive. The hot sauce keeps you human.
And the failures show what happens when you get it wrong. The Abraham Lincoln sailors had calories. They had a place to sleep. They had medical care. What they didn't have was a date on the calendar that they could trust. And that missing date was the thing that broke them.
The Mawson crew had a date, and they had a margin. And when the airdrop missed, the margin held. They were uncomfortable, but they weren't broken. The difference was planning.
Daniel's question about the reliable inventory is really a question about what we owe each other when we ask people to live in impossible conditions. The answer is, we owe them the margin. The extra toilet paper, the birthday cake mix, the hot sauce, the gym, the sauna, the library, the greenhouse, all of it.
And we owe them certainty. A date on the calendar. A promise that holds. The knowledge that the first flight in October is real, and the winter will end.
The Navy learned that the hard way. The polar stations have known it for decades. The margin isn't a luxury. It's the thing that keeps people whole.
I keep thinking about the logistician in Daniel's documentary. That person sat down with a spreadsheet and tried to predict 9 months of human need. Every item on that list was a guess about what someone would want, what someone would need, what someone would miss, and the quality of that guess determined the quality of the winter.
It's a profound responsibility, and it's mostly invisible. When it works, nobody notices. The toilet paper is just there. The hot sauce is just there. The birthday cake mix is just there. The crew complains about the weather and the work and each other, and they don't think about the person who made sure they had what they needed to complain comfortably.
The invisible logistician. The person who made the winter survivable and got no credit for it. Daniel's documentary did something rare by putting that person on camera.
Let's talk about the future for a minute. The resupply window is fixed by weather, but technology is changing. Drones are getting better. Could we see more airdrops during the impossible months? The Mawson failure suggests it's risky, but the attempt itself is new. 20 years ago, nobody would have tried a winter airdrop.
Climate change is also shifting the calculus. New polar routes are opening. Longer missions are being planned. The stations are getting more capable, but the fundamental problem remains. You're on your own for months, and the margin is what saves you.
The just-in-case philosophy will probably remain. Drones can deliver a critical spare part, but they can't deliver 9 months of toilet paper. The bulk supplies still have to go in the summer window. The margin still has to be there.
And the psychological margin will still be there, too. The birthday cake mix, the holiday decorations, the hot sauce. The things that say we plan for you to be human.
Fucking noodles.
Oh, sorry?
The instant noodles. You're leaving out the instant noodles. I worked a supply clerk job on a research vessel that got stuck in the ice north of Svalbard for 3 extra weeks. This was the late 70s, when getting stuck meant you stayed stuck. The scientists were fine on calories. What they lost their minds over was the same 3 flavors of instant noodles for the last 10 days. I had ordered 40 different types. 40. And the crew still complained about the ones they got tired of. The variety was the whole ballgame, not the quantity, the choice. A man will eat the same stew for a month if he chose it. The same stew when there's no choice is a grievance.
The choice itself is the morale item. That's a real insight. It's not the food, it's the agency.
I traded a case of whiskey to a Russian icebreaker crew for a pallet of fresh vegetables once. The whiskey was technically for morale. Really, it was for my sanity. The scientists were going stir-crazy without anything green, and the Russians had cabbage and potatoes and onions. The cabbage was half-frozen. Didn't matter. The crew ate it like it was steak. The choice of having a vegetable, any vegetable, changed the whole mood on the ship.
What did the Russians do with the whiskey?
Drink it, presumably. They were stuck too. Everyone was stuck. The whiskey was a fair trade for a pallet of vegetables that would have gone bad in another week. I think I got the better end of it.
The frozen cabbage as a morale item. That's the whole episode in one story.
The thing you said about the margin being invisible, that's true. I did that job for 3 seasons. Nobody ever thanked me for the toilet paper. But the one time I forgot to order enough coffee, I heard about it every day for 6 weeks. The margin is invisible until it's gone. Then, it's the only thing anyone talks about.
That's the operational definition of good logistics. You only notice it when it fails.
The failures are always the small things. The big things, the fuel, the medical supplies, those get planned to the gram. It's the hot sauce, the coffee, the birthday candles, the things nobody puts on a spreadsheet until someone's crying in the galley because there's no cinnamon for the holiday baking. That's what breaks people. The cinnamon.
The holiday baking. That's a real thing on stations. The midwinter celebrations matter enormously.
We had a cook who lost his mind over nutmeg. We had nutmeg, but it was in a container that got misplaced, and he spent 2 days looking for it before the midwinter dinner. Turned out, it was behind the flour. The whole station knew about the nutmeg. That's what we talked about for a week. Not the science, not the weather, the nutmeg.
The nutmeg as a symbol of everything that matters in isolation.
You order the nutmeg because you know someone will need it, and you know that when they need it, it'll be the most important thing in the world. That's the job. Ordering the nutmeg.
The most common wrong belief about polar station logistics is that it's about food and fuel. It's not. It's about predicting the full range of human need, from the critical to the trivial, and stocking for all of it. The trivial stuff is what keeps people sane.
The second wrong belief is that running out is the only risk. The uncertainty is the risk. The broken promise is the risk. The Abraham Lincoln had food. What it didn't have was a date that held. That's what we should be planning for.
The open question is whether the future brings more flexibility or less. Drones and new routes might allow more resupply during the impossible months. But the margin philosophy will probably remain, because the margin is what makes the impossible months survivable in the first place.
The polar station inventory is a mirror. It shows us what we actually need, not what we think we need. Calories and shelter are the baseline. The hot sauce, the nutmeg, the birthday cake mix, the choice of noodles, the frozen cabbage, those are the things that make the baseline livable. Daniel's documentary found the right person to focus on. The logistician is the one who knows what a group of people really needs, because they're the one who has to write it all down.
Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop, for keeping the show running. This has been My Weird Prompts. If you want to reach us, email us at show@myweirdprompts.com. We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.